Welcome to the PodTech.net Info Talk Series, here with an exclusive podcast with Steve Forbes, his first podcast. Welcome to the podcast.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
You're the editor-in-chief, president and CEO of Forbes, Inc. You're known for running a media conglomerate, running for president. Your views on the flat tax, which pretty much everyone knows if they haven't been living in a closet, you've been promoting that. And you just came out with a book that you wrote to kind of explain more about that called The Flat Tax. So I'd love to have a conversation with you about a couple things. I talk a lot about the impact of technology in a global marketplace or Web 2.0, but you're traveling around the world and you have a view of, from so many different perspectives, global social, global economic, global technology. You meet with people. So you have a world view, you have a country view, and you have an individual view. So talk about what you're seeing on a global basis with the world. Everyone's connected with technology. Obviously, we'll talk about with your book about flat tax being other countries are using it. But from a big picture, what's happening out there and how do you see things?
Actually, on a global basis, the world is doing better than most people seem to think. Well, I think, John, we're in one of those periods where perceptions are lagging reality. We've had that before in the early 1990s, for example, for Forbes magazine's 75th anniversary. We did a special issue, and the theme was, why do we feel so bad when we have it so good? So this is not the first time, but in terms of economic growth, the world has never had as much as it's been having in the last 2 years. You have over 2.5 billion people trying to join the global marketplace, India and China, and starting to make some impressive strides. And you have Eastern and Central Europe now on the right economic track, which I think is going to influence the economic policies of Western Europe, which has been stagnant for 20-plus years. I think they're going to begin to change under pressure from Central and Eastern Europe. So given the imperfect world we live in, and given the fact that, given human nature, it's still a very unsafe world, it always is, we are making progress, and things are moving in the right direction. Now, there are challenges. The Federal Reserve is still printing too much money and raising interest rates. That's going to hurt us next year. We need real tax reform, which you alluded to earlier, which is why I wrote the book, Flat Tax Revolution, Using a Postcard to Abolish the IRS. But that's what we're here for. When we see needed changes, we promote them.
So you talk about economic impact, especially in Europe. I mean, everyone's been talking about China. I live in California in the heart of Silicon Valley in Palo Alto, where, you know, everyone's all the rage, invest in China. You know, it's turned around. I reach a lot of bloggers and people who are connected with technology. There's a massive democratization happening with blogs and podcasting and just technology in general. I mean, we're seeing countries that were in poverty in the past, like China and in Asia, where they're now leading the charge. And the U.S. is shifting and investments going out over there. That's impacting the rest of the world. So do you see the technology being an enabler of that? And other countries like China have an enablement model. Where's the U.S. relative to all this? Obviously, we have broadband problems everyone talks about. This enablement view, talk about that. And you do talk about it in your book, but specifically the economic and technical impacts.
Well, we're still, despite are lagging on broadband, which is now getting to be very serious. I think we're about 15th or 16th in the world in terms of penetration, and probably about 116th in terms of what a typical household can get vis-a-vis you look at countries such as South Korea or Japan or Iceland. But we're still the largest growing and fastest growing economy among large economies in the world. That doesn't mean, though, we can rest on our oars. Quite the opposite. We do need to make substantial tax changes. We do need deregulation. Probably one of the best things we could do is take the Federal Communications Commission and the congressional committees that oversee it and send them to Pyongyang, North Korea, and let them just sit there so they don't do any harm here at home. In terms of the Federal Reserve, we mentioned that it's still printing too much money, which is giving us a mild inflation, which hurts economic growth, hurts innovation because investment gets distorted. People come to protect their money instead of investing their money and putting it to work. So here in the United States, we are still moving forward in terms of technology, but the bottom line is we still have a lot to do to get our own act together.
We could lose that leadership position. In fact, we're losing some. And just recently in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was today or yesterday, there was an article about now the networks want to stop things like Skype, where in Europe, the infrastructure is actually part of the utility and things are being enabled, new entrepreneurs are being developed, new technologies here in the U.S., they look at it as a problem. So, I mean, how do you tell the FCC? If the FCC does it go away? How do we reform that? How do we deal with that? I mean, it's stifling innovation.
Part of it is the executive branch has to take more leadership. To be blunt, the Bush administration has fallen down on telecommunications and the whole area of broadband deregulation. But it's something then that various congressional leaders can do. We have a presidential election coming up. If people are interested, they should go to Iowa, go to New Hampshire, and question the candidates. Put the question to them. What are we doing to catch up to Iceland, to Denmark, to South Korea, which is now the world leader in terms of broadband deregulation, broadband penetration? What are you doing to encourage that kind of environment? Why do we still have a capital gains tax, which gets in the way of innovation?
So, I mean, I read your book, and last night I was going through to make some notes for our conversation. But what was really inspiring reading through it is that it seems, and you just mentioned it, is that, I mean, our own processes and our own stuff is holding us back. And you mentioned in the book, you know, transparency, credibility, and trust, you know, that's gone. I mean, you know, a lot of people feel that that doesn't exist. And your flat tax that you're proposing in your book will increase more innovation. Talk about some of those three things, the transparency, credibility, and trust and within the flat tax and then just technology advancement in general.
Well, in terms of transparency, or even go to the broader topic of corporate governance, flat tax would be helpful in the sense that it does away with double taxation of dividends. We've already seen what the cut in personal dividend rates from 38% to 15% has done in encouraging companies like Microsoft to pay out more in dividends. There's no excuse for companies clutching their cash as they've done in the past. When they had profits in the past, they could say, hey, we pay it out, it just gets taxed, much of it. So we'll leave it in our hands, and that's in effect a tax shelter. Well, the flat tax, you wouldn't have that excuse anymore. So if you want to keep the money that you've made, you have to justify it to the shareholders. That's all to the good in terms of balance sheet manipulation. Federal income tax code today is 9 million words and rising. When you shear away those 9 million words and have a simple code, it's a lot higher to play those games, those offshore games. We're about the only country in the world that taxes overseas profits, have what they call extraterritorial taxation. A company in Ireland, if they make a profit here in the United States, they pay the IRS, but they don't pay Dublin. We should do the same thing. This past year, Congress put in an amnesty. Companies could bring back their overseas profits and pay only 5.5% tax instead of a 35% tax. And guess what? Over $200 billion has come home. Well, that begs the question, why not make that low tax rate permanent, which the flat tax does? The flat tax also helps in that it cuts the profits tax from 35 down to 17, and also allows you to write off your investments in the year in which you make them. So you buy a piece of machinery, software, or whatever, you expense it when you buy it, and if you have a loss, you carry it forward. What could be more simpler? What could be more potent in terms of encouraging people focusing on getting their businesses to move ahead instead of worrying about the shoals of the tax code?
A lot of people think, you know, a lot of people don't know about the tax, flat tax. They think it's confusing, but the bottom line is actually simpler. A lot of people are saying that it hurts the poor, helps the rich. I mean, I think the current system is the worst. I mean, the rich can have loopholes, and it's just so complicated. And you call it in your book an actual chapter called Nightmare on Main Street. I mean, the average person is affected at so many levels, and your point about innovation being stifled by it, people aren't doing more. They're not motivated. Really tell the young folks out there and the people and the listeners who are connected on the internet who will hear this on their iPod about that particular point about innovation, about credibility, and about the reality of how simple it really is.
Well, the nice thing about the flat tax is you have a single rate. You have generous deductions for adults and for children. A family of four, for example, would pay no federal income tax on their first $46,000 of income. And above that, you'd pay only 17 cents on the dollar. No tax on savings. No death tax, by the way. You've already paid enough taxes during your working life. And on the business side, as we mentioned, have the corporate profits tax and allow instant write-off, instant expensing for the investments you make. And this way, it helps especially young people starting out in life because it allows you to keep far more of what you earn, and it doesn't punish you for success. And by creating a more vibrant economy, because you're going to have more capital, more incentive for people to take risks, start new businesses, come up with new products and services. So you have a more vibrant, stronger economy, which means that your prospects as a young person have vastly improved in terms of pursuing your own careers, or if you wish to change your career. It's very hard now under the current code to put together any real assets because it goes out in taxes. Then you have to spend the rest of it to keep your head above water. It punishes people who try to save, create capital to start a business, not much less buying a car or buying a house. So it's good all around, especially for people who want to get ahead in life.
Yeah, I think the key thing that you mentioned in the book is that people, the misconception is that it doesn't do away with deductions. All it does is it eliminates other deductions that are part of the complex code. So the flat tax is actually a postcard with basic deductions.
You can do it exactly. You can do it on a sheet of paper or a postcard instead of having hundreds of different exemptions, big and small. Just give people one big exemption, roll it all up, bundle it up, take it, you're on your way. This way, you can do your tax return, if you're slow, in 5 minutes. If you're fast, you could probably do it in 5 seconds. But right now, 5 minutes, you're just starting to put your records together. The average American today, John, spends 26 hours a year just compiling the records they need to prepare their tax return. And talking about people starting out in life, even if you have a low income, you got to pay hard-earned money to have somebody prepare your tax return. It's ridiculous.
It's a pain in the butt, and quite frankly, it's not inspirational, and it breeds distrust. But let's talk about that point about really transparency and trust. And young people look at this, they think the government's up to something. Corporations are always finagling the books, and you know, Sarbanes-Oxley and that world we live in with people getting arrested for cooking books and everything. Young people kind of just don't like that. But more importantly is that really as a country, we're behind. You mentioned in your book quite clearly that other countries have been quite successful. And this kind of ties into my technology talks about global economy. Talk about the other examples of successes just recently, other countries?
Well, a number of countries have done it, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, formerly communist countries who want to get ahead, want rapid growth, know they're behind, want to catch up and move forward. And what they did was to throw out their old tax codes, convoluted, complicated, like ours, full of corruption, open to special interests, and put in simple flat taxes. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Russia, Ukraine, Slovakia, Romania, Georgia, Serbia, other countries are looking at it. And every country that has tried it, it has worked. In Russia, for example, they did it a little over 4 years ago, put in a 13% rate. And guess what? In 4 years, their revenues, in real terms, take out the inflation. Their revenues have more than doubled. The economy is growing again. When you get off the backs of people so they can focus on productive activities to develop their talents or let them take entrepreneurial risks, guess what? They do it. And here in our country, we spent last year, John, 6.5 billion hours filling out tax forms. We spent the equivalent of $200 billion just complying with the tax code. Now imagine if that brain power, those resources, could be devoted just to taking a vacation. Much less something more productive, the economy would literally blossom.
And then there's the cost of the IRS. I mean, you have basically, I mean, compound that with the back end costs. I mean, most people look at this as a complex piece of machinery. Every year, a new thing gets added. I mean, what you're proposing basically is a simple machine. People can understand it. There's no confusion. Breeds trust, transparency,
yes, the
and
current
more productivity.
System. You hit on the word trust. The current system brings out the worst in us. You get a bonus. Do you take it in January or December? You work at home. Do I deduct it as an office? You have old socks. Do I give that away as a charitable gift and try to take a deduction? You travel. You want to go on vacation? Hey, you tie it to some business convention, get a tax write-off. It brings out the worst in us.
People are gaming it for their own personal, you know, accounting when they could spend those hours helping people, working hard or taking a vacation. That's a great point. Everyone's got to get this book, The Flat Tax. A question on technology, because this brings up the global economy we live in. People are now connected. There's economy, people working on virtual teams. And technology has been a big impact recently. I want to talk to you about some of the world disasters. We had the tsunami, which was basically captured by amateur videos. I'm in the user production business myself with being a podcaster, your first podcast. So, I mean, people saw images of that. We had our Katrina. There was not many images, but there was some reporting, and then obviously the networks did a good job of covering it, which brought out huge support. But recently we had the earthquake. The response, no one really knows. There's no images. Is technology really driving that point, and how do you see the world responding to these disasters?
Technology makes everything more immediate, makes it more real rather than abstract. You hear earthquake. Oh, too bad. But it's a hard time to conjure up in your mind what it actually means, or the tsunami. But when you see videos, when you see photographs instantly, guess what? It becomes very real. It also means our response times have to be faster. In times past, it would be days, weeks, before any relief got there, and no one would even know about it or really care about it. Today, everyone. Happened a minute ago. Where's the relief? Why aren't you there? So I think you get a much better, faster response time. And even though in Pakistan and parts of India, there's been massive suffering because literally the roads were closed.
20-something thousand people died.
Thousands died. But many more would have died in the world we lived in 30 or 40 years ago because there wouldn't have been those images, because there wouldn't have been that instant information that could direct precisely where the aid needs to go. We didn't have the technology to deliver that aid via sophisticated airships, helicopters. So it's all to the good. Expectations go up, but the demand for performance goes up. Very uncomfortable. You know, human nature being what it is, we're never satisfied. It's never fast enough. But by golly, it is much more responsive when you see it instantly than it was just a few years ago.
And technology is a great enabler that I talked with Ray Kurzweil on the program. We talked about democratization. Talk about your views and how you see the world in terms of a virtual world. I mean, my 10-year-old plays massive multiplayer online game, and they're doing stuff. It's amazing. I mean, we're going to soon live in that world. What's your social view and economic impact of this socialization where people are connected, never meet each other?
Well, we all know the downside of the internet, of the web, bad websites, corrupting websites, people trying to seduce other people, do them real harm.
Fraud, phishing, all that stuff.
But not to mention identity theft and everything else. But one of the things that the web is doing is overcoming, in kind of a perverse way, the huge shortfalls in American education system. Yes, we have the finest colleges and universities in the world, but in K through 12, a lot of districts aren't doing their job. Kids come out of school not really knowing how to write, not knowing how to read at the level they should. Their exposure to maths and sciences is ridiculously low. China now graduates more English-speaking engineers than the United States does. That's how bad it is. A couple of years ago, a year ago, the president of Harvard got in a kerfuffle about making comments about women vis-a-vis boys, a knack for science or math. Heck, it's not women. It's both men and women. We have a shortage in the United States. So, but what the web has done, precisely with a lot of these games, the fact that you can now talk at the same time, bat away with four or five people, means your mental skills are developed in a way that hasn't been really developed before.
There's no ceiling. People can accelerate based upon what they consume, how they interact. I mean, people are sharing more with media and information. People are blogging and reporting. My son went to Google the other day and actually did a research report and actually got something out of the New York Law School. on a project he was doing with the Miwok Indians. This is amazing. He's actually reading it. He was interested in it.
Well, there you go. Where the mind is stimulated, curiosity is aroused, and instead of being a couch potato watching some sitcom, kids just have as much fun sitting down and scouring the world.
A lot of parents hold that back. And you're right, there is an underbelly on the web and a lot of people working on some cool technologies. Let's talk about, to kind of wrap this up and to the end of the segment here, about the future. You're known as a global guy, you're known for someone who's really promoting simplicity with the flat tax, and you write in your book about that. But the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see the key things happening? What profound change in our world will be in 5 years that no one will see, that you see?
I'm sure others see far more than I possibly could, but I think as broadband becomes a commonplace, full broadband, not what we have now, maybe the equivalent of 1,000 T1 lines in the next 10 years that everyone will have, the possibility of delivery of services, what it means in terms of communication around the world, in terms of creating things we hadn't even thought of before, is going to be profound. iPod. Where was iPod 5 years ago? Non-existent. So that is what's going to gin the thing up. And it's not just going to be new industries, new services, new products. Existing companies are going to figure out how to use this technology. They're going to transform themselves and be able to provide what we think of as traditional services in ways that we can't imagine today. So yes, politically, we've got real challenges. The Federal Reserve, mentioned earlier, is printing too much money, which means we're going to be hurt next year with a mild inflation. We already see it at the gas pump. But I think we get over those things, and what economists call the trend line is profoundly positive. We're living in an era that should be one of the most innovative, inventive eras, an era where the sum of human liberty is going to expand in profoundly positive ways. People are going to look back and say, that was a golden age. You never know it's a golden age while you live through it, but looking back, it's going to be a good era, I think.
A lot of people are like, oh, not as optimistic as you. And I'm with you on that. I really do believe it is going to happen. And you mentioned about the enablement and the massive change. How is our government going to have to respond to that to enable things you talk about, the web and the internet and the economic?
I think government has to realize what it's good for and what its limitations are. We saw in the disaster relief, it got in its own way. Wise management in the future, yes, government will obviously play a role, but use more of the private sector, which can respond quickly to emergencies. New Orleans should have made much more use of FedEx and UPS facilities. So I think government's going to realize that it's got to be much looser, much more flexible in terms of these things in the future. Massive centralized bureaucracies can't cut it the way they did in the past.
We're here with the exclusive first-time podcast with Steve Forbes, the president and CEO of Forbes, Inc., who wrote a great book that everyone needs to get. He actually put his words down in writing to prove to everyone that there's actually some substance behind it. It's real. In his book, he actually mentions how to get involved, and he mentions start a blog. Well, I started a podcast, but so you're on here. Talk about people, some of the resources they can get involved with. It's in the book, but there's blogs out there. Anything on Forbes.com, or do you know of any sites off the top of your head?
Well, we have a site, ChooseFlatTax.com, which does Q&A. You can register there. You can get a free chapter of the book. And you can do a calculator. Punch in the numbers for yourself and see how good this thing is. You don't have to take my word for it. See how it would work for you. And you're right, there is a chapter in Flat Tax Revolution that shows how you can get involved, either being part of a blog, starting a blog, participating in talk shows, writing letters to the editor of your local or daily or weekly newspapers, calling your representatives. Simple stuff. We show you how to do it. But if enough people start to do it, guess what? Things start to happen. And one of the great things about this whole electronic era we're in is you can create communities much faster than you could before.
No barriers to entry. The blogging is proving
that. No barriers to entry. And you can find like-minded folk, persuade other people. and start to put pressure in a way that just was inconceivable a few years ago.
Well, I'm really excited to have this conversation with you and push it out to the blogosphere and the rest of the world and all the iPod and MP3 player folks out there and all the directories, iTunes and Yahoo. But I have to ask the final question, which is, are you going to run for president again?
I'm an agitator now, not a candidate. I want to hold the candidate's feet to the fire.
Okay, but if you do, we'll come on PodTech, get the exclusive scoop.
Terrific.
Thanks for the podcast. Steve Forbes, the president and CEO of Forbes, Inc., editor-in-chief. Thank you.